Welcome to the podcast series of Middle East and Africa Textile Journal. The cotton t-shirt you are wearing right now isn't just fabric. I mean, it is a chess piece.
Oh, absolutely.
And right now, the global players moving those pieces are basically fundamentally rewriting the rules of a multi-billion dollar game.
Yeah, it is a massive, incredibly complex game. And honestly, the board is shifting faster than it has in decades.
Right.
Because when you pull on a single thread, you know, of the global textile industry, you are pulling on international trade dynamics, macroeconomic policy, supply chain security. I mean, it's a massive pivot in how the world manufactures its goods.
Exactly. And today's deep dive is focusing on a specific massive player on this chessboard, which is Turkey.
Yeah, a fascinating case study right now.
Totally. Our mission today is to understand how a manufacturing giant, a country that has relied on textiles and apparel as an incredibly reliable export engine for a long time, adapts when the ground basically gives way beneath them.
Right, when the old rules just don't apply anymore.
Exactly. And we are pulling our insights today directly from the Middle East and Africa Textile Journal. We are going to look really closely at their reporting to understand the severe pressures this industry is currently facing.
Which are intense, to say the least.
So, just to set the scene for you listening, Turkey has long been a powerhouse. They sit right on the doorstep of European markets. They have this deep legacy manufacturing base. And for years, that combination was an unassailable advantage.
But that advantage is currently under siege. And what's fascinating here is that the pressure isn't just a singular event. It's a pincer movement.
A pincer movement.
Yeah, you have massive external geopolitical shifts happening on one front, and then severe internal economic pressures squeezing them from the other side.
Well, let's look at the external pressure first. Because the biggest catalyst right now is coming directly from their absolutely biggest customer.
The European Union.
Right. The EU has been rolling out this evolving strategy known as the Made in Europe policy. But I have to push back a little here because hasn't Europe always favored its own internal markets?
I mean, sure.
So what makes this new push for regionalization an immediate existential threat to a Turkish manufacturer?
It is true that domestic preference isn't a completely new concept, but the intensity and really the mechanisms of this strategy are entirely different now.
How so?
Well, driven by the massive supply chain shocks we saw over the last few years and obviously rising geopolitical tensions globally, Europe isn't just gently encouraging local buying anymore.
Right. They're not just running ad campaigns.
Exactly. They are actively legislating to strengthen their internal production capabilities. They want shorter, more secure supply chains. And while the final legislative scope is still being hammered out, the market signal is unmistakable.
The writing is on the wall.
Yeah. European brands are being heavily incentivized to source materials and assemble products either within the EU borders or as close to home as possible and under very strict new regulatory frameworks.
So if you are a factory owner in Istanbul and your entire business model is built on feeding massive volumes of apparel to Berlin or Paris, that is a blaring warning siren.
Oh, a massive siren.
Because if that policy is implemented restrictively, it essentially locks you out of your primary revenue stream.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it gets much more complicated because this is where the internal squeeze comes into play.
Right, the other side of the pincer.
Yeah. While Europe is reconsidering its supply chains, the cost of manufacturing inside Turkey has literally skyrocketed. The reporting in the Middle East and Africa Textile Journal highlights this brilliantly.
Yeah, I read that.
They noted that over just a three-year window, export costs have jumped more than 20% in basket currency terms.
Wait, okay, I need to stop you right there.
Sure.
The journal mentions a 20% jump in basket currency terms.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds like something straight out of an IMF briefing.
It does sound a bit academic, yeah.
What does that actually mean for, you know, a factory owner trying to make payroll and buy raw materials on the ground?
That is a great clarifying question. Essentially, basket currency terms means we aren't just looking at the local Turkish lira. We are measuring costs against a weighted average of major foreign currencies, so usually a mix of the U.S. dollar and the euro.
I see.
Yeah, it shows the true global competitiveness of the country's exports. And what is happening in Turkey right now is a painful economic paradox.
Because inflation is crazy there right now.
Exactly. You have high domestic inflation, which means the cost of electricity to run the looms, the cost of raw materials, and obviously the wages for the workers are all soaring.
But normally in a situation like that, a country's currency devalues,
yeah,
right? which acts as a sort of shock absorber for exporters.
Right. Their goods become cheaper for foreign buyers to purchase.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is the standard economic theory, yes. But the Turkish government has implemented currency policies meant to stabilize the broader national economy and prevent the lira from going into freefall.
Oh, wow. So they're artificially propping it up.
Right. By artificially steadying the exchange rate while domestic inflation still runs incredibly hot, they are inadvertently wiping out the price competitiveness of their own exports.
That is wild.
So from the perspective of a European buyer paying in euros, that same Turkish t-shirt just got 20% more expensive to produce.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second, because it's kind of like it's like you've been selling the most popular lemonade on the block.
Okay, I like this.
Right. But suddenly, lemons cost 20% more to buy, and your absolute best customer just announced they want to start making their own lemonade.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
How do you survive that? I mean, the factory owner is trapped. Their local costs are through the roof, but they aren't getting the usual windfall from a weak currency when they sell their goods abroad.
Nope, they're getting squeezed from both ends.
And suddenly, they're losing ground to aggressive global competitors. You know, countries further east with significantly lower labor costs, or governments providing heavy export subsidies.
And when faced with the exact scenario, the conventional wisdom in the global garment industry is almost a reflex.
Which is to leave, right?
Yeah. For the last 50 years, the industry's playbook has basically been a race to the bottom. If your costs go up, you pack up your operations and you chase cheaper labor. You move to a new neighborhood.
Which brings us to the massive rumor that's been circulating in the industry. I was actually reading a breakdown of this on www.kohantextilejournal.com before we started recording today.
Oh, the piece on the export summit.
Right, exactly. And actually, before we get to why industry leaders completely rejected this relocation rumor, I want to remind you that you can read the full in-depth reports on these summit discussions by visiting www.kohantextilejournal.com.
It's definitely worth a read.
It really is. So, what fascinated me about that report, this was a recent high-level export summit organized by Dunia newspaper.
Right.
The industry leaders gathered to figure out the trajectory of Turkey's key sectors. And the prevailing rumor on the street was that a massive industrial exodus was underway.
People were panicking.
Yeah. People were pointing to North Africa, to places like Egypt, just assuming Turkish textile giants were going to relocate to survive.
And look, it makes logical sense if you view the industry purely through the lens of cheap labor.
Sure.
If you can no longer compete on cost because of a 20% structural increase in expenses, you move to a region where governments are practically giving away land and labor is a fraction of the price.
But the leaders at this summit completely rejected that narrative. Like, they are not leaving. And they were super emphatic about it.
They were. And understanding why they aren't leaving is honestly the key to understanding the future of global manufacturing.
Okay, lay it out for us.
So the industry leaders identified a unique, deeply entrenched strategic advantage that simply cannot be packed up in a shipping container and moved to Egypt.
And what is that?
Fully integrated production.
Right. The Middle East and Africa Textile Journal points to this integration frequently. But let's break down the mechanics of it for the listener.
Absolutely.
What does a fully integrated production line actually look like compared to, you know, a standard garment factory in a developing nation that just relies on cheap labor?
Well, a standard low-cost garment hub often only handles the final stage of the process, so cutting and sewing.
Okay.
They have to import the raw fiber, import the spun yarn, or import massive rolls of pre-dyed fabric from China or India.
Which takes time.
Tons of time. They wait weeks for those materials to arrive by cargo ship, clear customs, and finally reach the factory floor.
And Turkey doesn't do that.
No, Turkey, on the other hand, owns the entire value chain internally.
Wow.
Yeah, they grow the raw cotton, they have the massive industrial mills to spin that cotton into yarn, they have the facilities to weave or knit that yarn into fabric.
So they do literally everything.
Everything. They manage the complex chemical processes of dyeing and finishing, and then finally, they cut, sew, and package the ready-to-wear garment.
This makes total sense. Here's where it gets really interesting for me. It's like having a farm, a flour mill, and a bakery. All on the exact same street.
Yes, perfect analogy.
You don't have to wait for ingredients to cross an ocean. It's the difference between a custom PC builder who has to wait for graphics cards to ship from overseas versus a company like Apple who designs, tests, and prints their own silicon right in-house.
Yeah, they aren't waiting for a boat to arrive with the parts. They own the factory that makes the parts.
Exactly. And this gives them what? Faster production cycles?
Faster production cycles, extreme flexibility, and intense quality control. Because in today's fashion market, speed is the ultimate currency.
Oh, for sure. Things go viral overnight.
Right. If a specific color or style suddenly goes viral on social media, a European fast fashion brand needs that product on their store shelves in 3 weeks.
And you can't do that if you're waiting on a boat from Asia.
You physically cannot achieve that timeline. By having a fully integrated structure, Turkish manufacturers can compress that production cycle drastically.
Because they oversee every single step.
Exactly. It is a massive structural advantage that is incredibly difficult and, frankly, prohibitively expensive to replicate from scratch in a new country.
Plus, as the summit reporting makes clear, textiles don't just exist in a vacuum, right? You can't just uproot this sector because it is deeply woven into the country's broader industrial ecosystem.
Yeah, and this is a crucial point regarding the macroeconomic picture. Textiles and apparel are not some standalone, isolated anomaly in Turkey.
Right.
They are part of five core, heavy-hitting industries driving Turkey's entire export power.
What are the others?
Well, they sit right alongside automotive manufacturing, machinery, and white goods. So the factories building the refrigerators and washing machines for the rest of Europe.
Together, those sectors are pulling in tens of billions of dollars annually. I mean, they are the load-bearing pillars of the national economy.
You don't just casually unplug an industry that is that foundational.
Right. The employment impact alone would be catastrophic.
You just can't. So yeah. If we look at the board right now, relocation is off the table.
Right.
Competing purely on the old model of dirt cheap labor is no longer viable due to inflation and the currency stabilization we talked about.
So they're backed into a corner.
Exactly, which leads to the new mantra that emerged from that Dunia newspaper summit.
Right. The leaders were very clear. The sector is not in decline. It is in transition. They are shifting from cost-based competition to value-based competition.
Yes. And this is the crux of the entire survival strategy.
Okay.
If you can no longer be the cheapest option on the market, you have to be the smartest, the most responsive, and the most responsible.
Efficiency on the sewing floor just isn't enough anymore.
No. You have to fundamentally change what you are selling.
But so what does value actually mean for a basic garment? I mean, a cotton t-shirt is a cotton t-shirt, right?
You would think so.
How do you add enough value to a standard piece of clothing to make a European buyer ignore the made in Europe push, ignore the cheaper alternatives from Southeast Asia, and pay a premium for a Turkish product?
Well, it comes down to aligning perfectly with what the modern, highly regulated European buyer is being forced to prioritize right now.
Which is what?
Sustainability.
Yeah.
It is becoming the defining factor in international trade competitiveness.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. European buyers are no longer just asking how many cents per unit. They are demanding strict environmental compliance.
Because of the new EU regulations.
Exactly. They want traceability. They need documented proof of responsible production to satisfy their own regulatory boards and, honestly, their own consumers.
And this is where that fully integrated industrial base suddenly becomes their greatest weapon again.
You nailed it.
If you are a buyer, imagine having a QR code on a batch of shirts. You scan it, and you see a verified ledger proving exactly which field the cotton was grown in, verifying the labor conditions, and showing the exact water usage of the dyeing facility.
Yeah.
You can only provide that level of granular traceability if you control the entire chain. If a factory is just buying random spools of yarn from three different countries on the open market, proving that provenance is a total nightmare.
It is practically impossible to prove without massive gaps in the data. Because Turkey controls the supply chain internally, they are uniquely positioned to provide that exact transparency.
That is such a huge advantage.
It is. But sustainability isn't just about, you know, administrative transparency. It requires heavy, capital-intensive innovation.
Right. You can't just slap a sticker on it.
Exactly. You cannot become a sustainable manufacturer using 30-year-old machinery.
Which is why the Middle East and Africa Textile Journal put such a heavy emphasis on digitalization.
Huge emphasis, yeah.
And they aren't just talking about upgrading the software in the accounting department, right? We're talking about advanced manufacturing technologies on the factory floor.
Oh, absolutely. A perfect example of this is digital textile printing. This is a massive leap forward from legacy processes.
Okay, explain the mechanism there, because digital printing sounds great, but how does it actually change the economics and the environmental impact of a factory?
Well, think about traditional fabric dyeing. It typically requires massive vats, literally swimming pools of water, to soak, boil, and saturate the fabrics.
It sounds incredibly messy.
It is. And it's followed by heavy chemical washes to set the color. It is incredibly resource intensive and creates highly toxic wastewater runoff. Digital printing, however, operates quite literally like the modern inkjet printer sitting on your desk.
Wait, really?
Yeah. It microdoses exact microscopic amounts of dye directly into the specific fibers of the fabric.
So you aren't soaking anything.
Exactly. You are cutting water usage by sometimes up to 90%.
90%? That's insane.
It's massive. There is virtually no chemical runoff. And because it's digital, you can switch patterns instantly without shutting down the line to clean out the huge vats.
See, this connects the dots perfectly.
Yeah.
This isn't just a public relations stunt to look green for European regulators.
No, not at all.
By drastically cutting water consumption and chemical use, you are fundamentally lowering your raw input costs.
Yes.
That directly helps offset the 20% spike in domestic expenses we talked about earlier.
That is the magic of true innovation. It solves multiple problems simultaneously.
It really does.
And the Middle East and Africa Textile Journal also highlights smart production systems and advanced automation.
Like what?
We are talking about sensors on the cutting floor that use artificial intelligence to optimize how patterns are sliced from a roll of fabric.
Oh, to minimize scrap.
Exactly, reducing physical waste down to the millimeter. It increases output efficiency, eliminates human error, and again, hits those sustainability metrics by reducing waste.
Wow.
These technological upgrades are no longer optional, nice-to-have features. They are the absolute price of admission for participating in the modern global market.
It is a complete paradigm shift.
Yeah.
Let's synthesize this, because this is really the core takeaway of this deep dive.
Mm-hmm.
For decades, the global textile industry was a race to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Who could leverage the cheapest labor to make a million plain white t-shirts the fastest?
Mm.
But that era, at least for a legacy powerhouse like Turkey,
mm-hmm.
is dead.
It's gone.
The traditional advantages of high volume and low cost are gone, and they aren't coming back.
The future of manufacturing is entirely about flexibility, verifiable sustainability, and deep technological integration. Turkey is essentially taking a legacy infrastructure and forcing an evolutionary leap. They are upgrading their entire industrial mindset to survive the made in Europe squeeze.
And the stakes honestly couldn't be higher. If they fail to transform, the rising domestic costs and the shifting geopolitical trade walls will crush the sector.
Without a doubt.
But if they succeed, they provide a blueprint for what a modern, value-driven manufacturing hub looks like in the 21st century. Growth will not come from moving production. It will come from transforming how production is done.
Exactly. The pressures documented by the Middle East and Africa Textile Journal are severe. But when you map out their structural advantages, that deeply integrated supply chain, the proximity to Europe, the willingness to invest in digital printing and smart automation, this doesn't look like an industry in its twilight.
No, it really doesn't.
It looks like an industry crossing a very difficult threshold into a much more resilient future.
It is a profound turning point. When the rules of the game change, you don't flip the board over in frustration, and you don't necessarily move your pieces to a cheaper table.
Right.
You change how you play the game. You transition from competing on how cheap you can be to competing on how much undeniable value you can provide.
Yeah.
It requires investment, vision, and a brutal willingness to abandon the very strategies that made you successful in the past.
Which is incredibly hard to do.
It is. Which leaves me with a final thought for you listening right now. We've just spent this time dissecting how a massive traditional industry is being forced to entirely re-engineer itself from cheap volume to sustainable value.
Yeah.
Now, look at your own industry. Look at your own career path. Where are you still trying to compete by simply being the lowest cost option or by putting in the most raw brute force effort?
That's a great question to ask.
In a world where artificial intelligence, automation, and shifting economic rules are constantly changing the landscape, where should you be pivoting right now? How can you upgrade your own integrated production to compete on value, on unique insight, and on innovation? Because if a multi-billion-dollar global supply chain has to adapt or die, so do the rest of us.
The landscape will always shift. The survivors are the ones who stop chasing the bottom and start building toward the top.
Well said. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. To stay ahead of the curve on global manufacturing, to understand these shifting trade policies, and to see the innovations driving the future of industry, make sure to visit www.cohantextilejournal.com and keep reading the incredible reporting in the Middle East and Africa Textile Journal. We will catch you on the next one.